And welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and we are bringing you the natural nurse and Dr. Z. We're so happy to be on board with the network here, Progressive Radio Network, because one of the things are the excellent programs that you can hear here, but the other thing is that's actually 24/7. 24/7 is exciting because we have listeners from all over the world all the time. You just go to prn.fm, visit our show, which is Natural Nurse, and all the archives are there. In addition, I've recently looked at the counter, and it is about 140,000 listeners and downloads of our podcasts. And I believe today's show is the 200th podcast that will be actually archived right here on Progressive Radio Network, although Dr. Zamparan and myself, the hosts of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, have actually literally many thousands of radio shows that we have been doing since 1988 in terms of holistic living and natural medicine. And we are so happy to have as our guest today Dr. Jill Barron. Dr. Jill is a highly skilled and compassionate physician who is board certified by both the American Board of Family Medicine and the American Board of Integrative Holistic Medicine. She is also certified in functional medicine and is a certified menopause practitioner with the North American Menopause Society. Dr. Barron's has a strong interest in the mind-body connection, and she actually started young in life with transcendental meditation at the age of 16. And she completed a degree in biology at Princeton University, attended Mount Sinai School of Medicine, and fulfilled a residency in family medicine at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. And Dr. Barron has a long list of accomplishments, as well as being a pianist and a violinist. So we are so happy to have Dr. Jill Barron on our show today. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Barron.
Oh, my pleasure. That's really quite an introduction, and I really appreciate it.
Well, excuse me. Those are your specs. So, yeah, you have a very, very impressive background. You are obviously well-steeped in conventional training, talking about Princeton University, Mount Sinai Medical School, and Stony Brook Medical School. These are major institutions. So I don't imagine that you got your introduction to your focus on integrative and holistic techniques at these locations. So I'm wondering how that developed for you in your life.
Well, I always had an interest in mind-body medicine. As a child, I just remember being a very sensitive person, child. I am also a Pisces, a triple Pisces for those people who believe in astrology, although I don't live my life by it, but I'm a very sensitive person, and I think I'm a very intuitive person. And I remember reading a local newspaper and seeing an ad for transcendental meditation, and I was just attracted to it. And I was interested in stress at that point when I was about 16. And I learned TM, and I've had an interest in mind-body medicine, I believe, ever since.
So then, you know, with that development of that side of yourself, which obviously has been an interest early in life, what led you to go to conventional medical school, which, you know, going through that training, you do have to sublimate some parts of that so that you could focus on what you need to learn in conventional training?
Well, Ellen, that's really a great question. I really never, didn't really know much about holistic medicine or anything about that. I just thought that I wanted to become a doctor. I really wanted to help people. And that's what
people
did.
Well, there's a big thing right there. That was interesting. And, you know, most of the physicians I talk to, and we have so many as guests here on our radio show, really did think about that in terms of serving people. And, you know, rather than the fact that, oh, I'm going to make $1 million, which, of course, nowadays a lot of physicians are not no longer even doing. But that usually was not the motivating factor that led them to that kind of profession.
I know. It's even funny because when I was at Mount Sinai, which is in New York City, and we were choosing our specialties, and I chose family medicine, and I'll tell you why in a minute, They were thinking, like, family medicine? Now, who goes into family medicine? Like, why not become a neurosurgeon or a dermatologist or an ophthalmologist, which are all very good fields? But I had had an interesting experience during, in between my third and fourth years of medical school. I heard about family practice. I didn't even know what it was. It was the old GP, but I thought I would go into internal medicine, which people just, when you go into internal medicine, you just see adults. You're trained to see adults. And really, in the specialty of internal medicine, your training is mostly in the hospital, not so much outpatient, although that probably is changing since I've gone through residency. So I ended up going to a conference in Kansas City. I wanted to see Kansas City as well. And they had a conference with students and residents about family medicine. And the first lecture that I listened to was given by a guy by the name of Rick Richards, and he was representing an organization founded by Dr. Alan Blum called DOC, Doctors Ought to Care. And I heard this guy lecture, and I said, that's what I want to do. You know, help people, teach people, educate people, and I decided then to become a family practitioner. And so I did. And also, in family medicine, I wanted to be, quote-unquote, this was in those days, a real doctor, quote-unquote, where I would see all ages. And family medicine is a specialty. It's the 20th medical specialty. And we're trained to see people from what we call cradle to grave, all ages. And in that specialty, I learned how to deliver babies. I even thought about leaving family medicine to go into OBGYN because I loved delivering babies. But I really decided that I wanted to do family medicine because it's the most, also the most mind-body of the specialties. In my residency program, we had a social worker. I don't know if they have that in other specialties. So, very, very interesting path.
Wow, and it says, sounds like, you know, you allowed yourself to be led the whole time, but obviously you were able to handle the very intensive training that comes with the kinds of schools that you attended.
Yes, yes. I'm not sure I'd want to do it again at this point in my life because it's a very intense experience going through residency. But it was also.
Well, luckily you did it when you were younger, so you don't have to do it now. Now you are fully accredited in so many fields. As we mentioned, your American Board of Integrative Holistic Medicine certified.
Yes.
With them, as well as functional medicine. What's the difference between those two organizations? Why would you go for certification with both?
Again, another good question. Well, integrative medicine or integrative holistic medicine, all these terms, they're probably going to be emerging one day of all these terms. And integrative medicine really is, or holistic medicine, is really an umbrella term for a combination of, I would say, conventional Western medicine and holistic and mind-body or alternative therapies, kind of a, you know, overall term. Functional medicine is a term that was coined by Dr. Jeffrey Bland, who is the father of what's called functional medicine. And he was looking for a word just to use, because functional medicine is just a way of assimilating the data, assimilating what's going on, mind, body, spirit, and kind of looking at it in a framework. So where we try and get to the root of what's going on. So instead of thinking about medicine as like gastroenterology and dermatology and ophthalmology, which, again, in my conventional hat, I still have, and I do a full conventional Western history, but amplified, of course, with my functional medicine questions and a very thorough conventional physical exam. But then when I take the additional history and the complete history, I'm looking at thinking of things in a different way. I'm looking at what's called antecedents, triggers, and mediators in a person's life. So from their genetics to what their parents were doing when they were pregnant with the patient, to current triggers in their lives that may be like a divorce or something, that loss of a job or loss of a loved one that may have triggered the current symptoms, and then what's called mediators, things that may be ongoing, like a stressful job. And then we have these, and then we look at the symptoms, the patient's symptoms, in terms of what we think of in terms of like these seven areas. I think it's seven, like assimilation, which so assimilation would include digestion in terms of food. Then we have what's called structural integrity, where we're looking at not everything from like the cells to the bones to the ligaments to the whole skeleton. And then we have detoxification. We're looking at what drugs and supplements the person is on and so on. Inflammation, again, do they have allergies? And what we do is we kind of have in front of us like a matrix, a functional medicine matrix. And as patients give us the history, we also take a timeline. So we start from before they were born to current concerns, and we take all this information, including the antecedents, triggers, and mediators, and also about their sleep and their lifestyle and their relationships and their stress level. And we kind of map this out on a matrix. Now, I don't always do that. I may be thinking of it in my head, but we can see, we ask the question, where is the most ink? Meaning, where are the most, if we write these things down, where do we see the most symptoms or concerns? And then that's a point for us to kind of look at, okay, we're trying to find out the root of what's going on with this person and how these other different areas like inflammation and structural integrity and digestion are affected. And that's a way of looking at the patient. I hope it wasn't too confusing in that explanation.
No, not at all. What you're talking about is individualized medicine, and I think anyone listening can understand that if you were to come to your office, and by the way, you can find Dr. Jill at Dr. Jill, J-I-L-L, Barron, B-A-R-O-N, drjillbarron.com, and you can mention where your office is, Dr. Barron.
Thank you. It's at 110 East 55th Street, that's 55 Street, in New York City.
Listening can clearly grasp the vast difference between just the kind of intake you're talking about, the first step, versus what you're going to get in a conventional practice, which takes less than 5 minutes. Obviously, you're not going to do an intake in 5 minutes. You are looking at not the fact that someone has high blood pressure, which they may, and which you certainly may treat appropriately, which I imagine may include pharmaceuticals if that's needed, after the, you know, and of course preferably the mind-body and other techniques, which are so valid, but you're not looking at the high blood pressure. You're looking at why this individual has high blood pressure.
Right, exactly. I mean, what we're doing is we have to stabilize someone. So in that case, if a person has very high blood pressure, you want to make sure that a person would not get a stroke or a heart attack. So in that case, I would put someone on a medication. However, like you said, then we look at what is going on in the patient's life. Is the patient under a lot of stress? I would also do a very thorough blood work and that kind of thing to see what's going on and to see why a person might be presenting with high blood pressure.
Exactly, but that's the point. It's that person where I feel like conventional medicine, it's not even about the person. It's about the high blood pressure, and anyone who has it above a certain number is going to be treated the same way.
That's true. It's interesting. When I was going through my training and when I was practicing, I practiced for a number of years, and really didn't do much integrative medicine, although I taught classes in meditation and stress management. And as I was learning my integrative medicine, I remember just being very happy that when I gave a blood pressure medication, the blood pressure would come down. We were trained. My training was about how to treat these symptoms and these problems, not necessarily to get at the root. There was never really any training that I remember in this way where we were looking at the root. And that was just the way the system is. But I think it's changing, as there are several medical schools that are now incorporating integrative medicine and may have departments of integrative medicine in their medical schools. But it's more about
symptom
management.
Right direction.
Pardon me?
I said that's a step in the right direction.
Yes. I think it's terrific. I mean, I just think that this is the way medicine should be practiced in terms of being open to what works. Again, we don't want to do any harm, and you have to be careful about just taking any kind of supplements and that kind of thing. And again, but you want to be open, I think, to what works. I mean, I've done energy medicine in my practice for a while. I'm not doing it anymore right now because the people who were coordinating it, not doing it anymore. But I believe in all this. I believe in energy, and everything is energy. And I'm open to these things, again, with a do-no-harm framework.
And that is definitely a wonderful perspective. Now, is the energy medicine you're talking about something like mind-body?
Well, it was called Consegrity. They stopped doing it. Unfortunately, the founders passed away, which is a horrible testament to the thing, but it was a very interesting thing. And I learned, and Reiki is another example. There are many different types of energy medicine.
Well, really, in nursing, it's interesting because they have a technique called therapeutic touch.
Yes, right.
It has actually been clinically studied for changing quantifiable parameters, and it's basically the same thing as Reiki.
Mm-hmm. Is that with Barbara Brennan?
No, Brennan actually does another technique.
Right. Was that Dorothy Krieger who did the therapeutic?
Yes.
Right.
That's
okay.
Exactly correct. That's
right.
Exactly. That was the originator. In fact, I think she was at NYU.
I think she was. I think that I'll never forget when I was a few years back, just starting out, and I was in this practice. I was in a multi-specialty private practice, and we saw mostly women, although we saw men as well. And my mentor, who has passed away, unfortunately, had a vision for putting care under one roof. Her name was Penny Wise Budoff. Maybe you knew of her.
Very well, and I did not know she passed away.
Yes, unfortunately, she has ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes, but she was a pioneer, and she felt that we should have care for women under one roof, so we had all the different specialties, including radiology. And we did see men as well, but primarily women. And I remember I had a patient who was probably in her mid-80s and was not was in a wheelchair. And I don't think anybody ever touched her or physically touched her. And I remember she never used to smile too much. And I would always try and be kind, and I would always make a point of kind of putting my hand on her and touching her. And, you know, she once got me a Christmas present of hand warmers because my hands were so cold in those days. But I remember thinking that what this person needs and what people really need is TLC. I mean, they need competent medical care, but they also need care, someone who cares about them and is interested in them. And I really feel that people need TLC. People need love. And that's part of healing as well.
That's certainly true. Now, I know you are a specialist looking at how stress influences even specific symptomatology in patients.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most people think, oh, stress is just such a general term, but really there's a lot of deep and quantifiable science on exactly what goes on with the stress response in the body.
Yeah.
That leads things like inflammation, which most people know is linked to so many degenerative illnesses. So by decreasing stress through specific protocols, you actually can have measurable changes.
Yes, there are. There are studies with mindfulness meditation, and mindfulness is really a technique that was popularized by Jon Kabat-Zinn, and it's just basically being in the present moment and focusing on what's going on in the present moment. And there are studies that have shown connections in the brain, making the brain, the actual brain tissue, thicker. And it's been shown that it can lower blood pressure and improve immune health and focus and memory and anxiety and depression. I also practice transcendental meditation, which also has a tremendous body of literature, which has shown decreases in stress hormones and improvement in sleep and improvement in creativity and focus. And doing
TM people have done a wonderful job at documenting. I think I got certified in 1976, something like that, quite a long time ago, when Maharishi Mahesh Yogi was just bringing that training early on. And I've used that every day ever since.
Really? You're doing TM still?
Oh, yeah, I'm still doing TM.
That's incredible.
I'm still doing TM. But I don't, you know, I've studied so many techniques, and I think whatever path someone finds that can bring them into that feeling of peace within,
yes,
is it. I mean, there was an interesting study, and it was actually in Newsweek magazine, of all places, in March of, I believe it was 2008, and I have that study. If any listeners want me to email it to them, you can get in touch at naturalnurse.com. And the study took a TM, someone doing transcendental meditation, and then another person who was a nun, mm-hmm. and then a Buddhist monk, and they had all of them use their technique, which worked for them, and then they actually did a radiological brain scan of when the person said they were in that state,
mm-hmm.
which we can all feel if anyone has meditated. It's fantastic. It's where you want to be. And they did a brain scan, and they found that the area of the brain that tells you that you're separate actually turns off. And that's true regardless of the technique that you use to get into that mind state. And I found that so fascinating. I actually then, just like trying to ride a bicycle, since they had the actual brain scans there and you could look at them and see the part of the brain mm-hmm. that they're talking about, which is right on the lateral sides, I actually isolated that for myself and learned to just turn it off at will.
Wow.
So I can take these little mini deep, deep meditation breaks at any time.
Mm.
And I thought that was so useful. Like, you know, this is from Newsweek magazine, not from any, you know, Native American teacher or guru, but but really, really interesting that we definitely can take control of shutting down that that overproductive stress response, which is, you know, often due to worry.
Oh, totally. I think that the mind is the biggest culprit, really. I mean, because it's what you think that basically creates who you are.
So learning to step back and look at that is such a wonderful gift that you're giving to your patients, you know, to allow them to have a way to actually influence physical parameters in their body through associating their processes, that inner turn. It's not thoughts. It's not like intellectual thoughts as much as that, well, I call it a worry wheel. I don't know what your term for it is.
Yeah, it's like a loop. People just get worrying, and they are worrying, and they obsess, and it's hard. And the more, I've heard this, that the more whatever you think about expands, right? Have you heard that expression?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, so the more you think about something, it does expand and make it bigger. And I think that I kind of recommend a couple of things to my patients, to have some kind of basal practice or daily practice, you know, be it TM or mindfulness where they're sitting, or Qigong or Tai Chi, and then to have something that's in the moment when they're stressed. There's a thing called heart math, which I'll teach some of my patients, or mindfulness, again, in the moment, or what's called EFT. Have you heard about EFT?
I have, so why don't you tell us? You know what, we do have to take a one-minute break, Dr. Barron, a few minutes, actually. We're going to listen to the Natural Medicine Chest. So when we come back, let's pick up with that. We'll let our listeners wonder, what is EFT? And Dr. Jill Barron will elucidate that topic and many more. when we come right back after this, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll talk about high blood pressure or hypertension.
Hypertension or high blood pressure is a disease of the Western world and a product of modern civilization. Cultures that continue to adhere to an indigenous lifestyle, which includes low stress levels, a non-refined whole foods diet, as well as vigorous exercise, experience virtually no episodes of essential hypertension. It is very interesting to note that when individuals from these societies emigrate to Western countries and adopt Western habits, they too fall prey to hypertension. Naturopathic treatment of hypertension has not changed essentially in the last century. The mainstay of the treatment still relies on diet, exercise, stress reduction, lifestyle modification, with secondary support from other modalities such as hypotensive phytotherapy or herbal medicine, hydrotherapy, which is the therapeutic use of water, clinical nutrition, as well as homeopathy. We'll focus on phytotherapy in this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest.
Let's talk about Taraxacum officinalis. This is an unpopular nuisance to many homeowners trying to build that perfect lawn. However, this common weed, the dandelion, is a powerful yet safe botanical medicine for the treatment of hypertension. In a Romania study in 1974, the common dandelion was found to be as potent a diuretic as a commonly used drug called Lasix. Dandelion, however, due to its rich levels of potassium, acted against potassium ion depletion, a dangerous condition known as hypokalemia, seen as a side effect of many antihypertensive drugs which promote diuresis. The leaf of the dandelion was a more effective medicine than the root, although the root is utilized by naturopathic physicians and has a powerful liver-specific medicinal quality.
Crataegus oxycantha, also known in the vernacular as hawthorn, is a common tree in the family Rosaceae, or the rose family. Extracts of the plant in the Western literature date back far beyond the Middle Ages. Even the Chinese were privy to its usage, especially as a digestive tonic. The therapeutic principles are found in extracts from the leaves, berry-like fruits, as well as the flowers. In Europe, Crataegus is well respected for its effects at lowering blood pressure, blood lipids, reducing angina attacks, and preventing and perhaps reversing atherosclerotic deposition in arterial walls. This plant has demonstrated a remarkable safety record, but because of its powerful effects, it should not be used with certain cardiac or hypotensive drugs and should be used by a qualified practitioner of alternative medicine.
Other herbs are also helpful for hypertension, such as garlic, olive, and olive oil, and ginkgo biloba.
So if the pressures of life are making your blood boil, don't forget about these herbal medicines the next time you reach into the Natural Medicine Chest.
And thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and as always, I'm wishing you the best. And we had a lot of listeners come with us on our last Chinatown trip, Echo Tours for Cures, where we go to Chinatown to learn about things like tongue and pulse diagnosis, all the natural herbs that are available there, the thousands of years of knowledge. And we had a wonderful trip. It was sold out as usual. So you can get in touch at naturalnurse.com, look under schedules about the many classes and workshops that we teach. And one of the things I participate in, as well as Dr. Jill Barron, our guest today, is the Naval Expo. That's navalexpo.com. And there are Naval Expos in your area, in Manhattan, as well as Long Island, twice a year. We have one coming up, for those of you who are listening right now, on November 8th, that's Sunday, November 8th, in Huntington Hilton, in Long Island. So you can join us for that. And we have lots of online classes where you can actually get certifications in herbal medicine, both on professional levels as well as people who are just starting out. So we have so many things going on. Just go to naturalnurse.com under schedules. And I would like to reintroduce my guest, Dr. Jill Barron, MD, who is highly skilled as well as a compassionate physician. And she's board certified in conventional medicine, such as the American Board of Family Medicine, and also in more holistic medicine, such as the American Board of Integrative Holistic Medicine, as well as functional medicine. And she is a certified menopause practitioner. You're very lucky if you're listening in the New York area, because Dr. Jill Barron does have a lovely office right in downtown Manhattan. And anyone can find out more by going to her website, Dr. Jill Barron, that's D-R, Jill, J-I-L-L, Barron, B-A-R-O-N, drjillbarron.com. If you enjoyed listening to this show, you know you can always visit Progressive Radio Network at any time. And this show, along with all of our shows, is archived, so you can download it or listen to it or share it with a friend or click on Jill Barron's link so you go right to her office website. So thank you again so much for joining us today, Dr. Barron.
Oh, my pleasure, Ellen.
Now, we left off, and we do have to, you know, fulfill this with those who have listened through the break. What is EFT?
Well, I haven't had that much experience with it, but I have had some. And EFT, the other name for it, what it means is Emotional Freedom Technique. And from what I know, it's based on the Chinese medicine meridians or energy channels. And it's been used, it was popularized by Nick Ortner in the Tapping Solution. That's the name of his book. And it's about tapping on areas on the body and saying a statement. Initially, I think you say a statement that it is a negative statement about what's going on. So let's say you say that I am, my life is terrible and I'll never get better, and then you tap on like a karate chop on the hand, and then you start reframing these statements and you start tapping on the body and on the head and the chest and the trunk and then the top of the head, and you say other statements that are more positive. And what you do is you start out with a number. You say, how painful is this thought? Let's say you say it's a 10, on 1 to 10. And then you start tapping. And you tap a few times, do a few rounds, and then you reassess and say, what is the number now? This is, again, a very schematic overview of EFT, but there is some literature on it. There's a good literature review by David Feinstein. It's called Acupoint Stimulation Research Review. I think it's the American Psychological Journal. Let me just make sure I get that right for anybody who's listening. Let's just see here. I think it's the American. I'll get that in a sec. But anyway,
we get in touch with you through the link on the show archive. So
okay, great. Yeah, it was the American Psychological Association.
Excellent.
On energy psychology.
So now let's talk about what you presented at the Naval Expo, and people can always find out more at navalexpo.com. I think that is such a wonderful seminar location that is goes on twice a year, both in Manhattan as well as Long Island, because a lot of people come to get introduced to people like yourself. Let's say they want to see a holistic physician. They found a few on a website or in a book. That's not the same as visiting with that individual.
Yes, yeah, so I talked about, the title of my talk was Getting to the Heart of the Matter, Creating Healing, Mind, Body, Spirit. And what I presented is that I think it's important to have a foundation. It's like when you build a house, you have a foundation. And that foundation is composed of four different things. One would be sleep. Most important is sleep. I'll go over each one. Two is diet. Three is meditation. And four is movement. And when you have these four things handled, your life just works better. Now, it's not easy. We all live very hectic lives, or most of us. I know I do. And it's hard to kind of get all these plates spinning at the same time. But if you can get this foundation down, I believe your chances of really having optimal health and well-being really improve. And we know that sleep is really important. And the recommendations are, and again, anything I say during this interview, it's always important to see your doctor first before doing anything that I would recommend. But for sleep, the general consensus has been that for women, it's important to get at least 7 to 8 hours most days of the week, and for men, at least 6 hours a night. And also, it's important to go to bed before midnight, because after midnight, your body gets revved up. You start becoming more alert. You start increasing your stress hormones, which is another reason why people can gain weight if they have a lot of insomnia and also get high blood pressure, is because cortisol gets released, and cortisol breaks down stored sugar, and because you need that sugar, glucose, for energy and also some fat. And when you have that going on at night, all that sugar and fat circulating, you can gain weight. So it's important to go to bed before midnight. And even in China, in Ayurvedic medicine, which is Indian medicine from India, which is a very powerful technique, like Chinese medicine, has been around for several thousand years, they talk about that you have ideal time to go to sleep. Ideally, you should go to bed before between 9:30 and 10:30, wake up between like 5:30 and 6:30, have your lunch between 10:30 or 10 and 2 in the afternoon, and have dinner ideally before 8 o'clock. So it's very, very interesting. But sleep is really important in terms of adequate sleep is important to prevent problems with memory. People who don't get enough sleep, they have memory loss. They're more irritable. They're more prone to accidents. So it's really important. Number one thing I say is sleep. And as far as the other components of a healthy foundation, I would say that it's important to have a healthy diet. And having a healthy diet is really important to eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. People probably know what a healthy diet is. Our body was not really made to have processed food. And if we think about that, really, our bodies were not made to eat processed food. And ideally, if we stick to a diet of healthy vegetables, like a Mediterranean diet, where you have vegetables and lean protein, not too much meat, some grains, holistic grains, and organic grains, and fish, fatty fish like salmon, and ideally wild, you're eating a healthy diet that's very, very good for your brain. Also, I want to add olive oil. Olive oil is very, very good for the body.
And healthy.
And then the next part that I think is very, very important is movement. I mean, whenever you move, I mean, how do you feel when you don't move for a few days or exercise or walk? You feel sluggish, right?
Well, me personally, I wouldn't know, because that's like on my schedule. It's written in. So
right.
I don't think that has happened unless I've been like really ill, you know. I don't even remember when, thank God.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Because it is
also addictive. When you're used to moving every day, you don't feel well and you miss it. So you are very motivated to keep that going.
You do. And the great thing about movement is that it really makes you feel good. I'm very interested in dance and music. I'm actually giving a lecture at the Integrative Healthcare Symposium on dance and health. And, you know, there's a lot of literature how, you know, dance can do a lot of things besides the aerobic benefits that you get from dancing. It brings people together. It forges connections and bonds with people. I mean, it improves flexibility. They're doing a lot of research in Parkinson's disease with movement and dance and also in Tai Chi. And these things are really being used to show that movement is really, really helpful and healthy. And even just taking baby steps for any of these things I'm mentioning, taking baby steps, not having to get everything down right, but maybe if you go to sleep late at night, let's say you go to sleep at 1 in the morning, maybe for the next few nights, move it back to 1 o'clock in the morning and then go to 12 o'clock and then bring it down to 11 o'clock. So it's not too much of a shock for you if you can't just go to bed earlier. So it's about taking baby steps with all of this stuff. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up, the last building block, is some sort of meditation, as I mentioned before, some sort of daily practice, which I believe really helps to build resilience. And all of these things, diet, sleep, movement, and meditation, or Tai Chi or Qigong, these really strengthen the immune system, and they build resilience, because the idea is that when you're really stressed, you're pushed off your center, you're pushed off your mark. And if you don't have enough resilience, then it will take a long time for you to get back to your emotional and physical center. I don't know if you remember this, Ellen, but when I was growing up, they used to have these plastic clowns that had like a weight at the bottom of the clown, and you could kind of hit the clown, and the clown would go down and come back up. And that's how
the
way of looking at resilience. You know, if you get knocked down and that clown goes down, the slower it comes back up means that you don't have that much resilience. It takes you a long time to get back to your emotional and physical center. So that's why it's important to have a foundation for optimal health and well-being. And then the other things supplement these things.
Yes. Now, one of the things I just want to mention, it's just a matter of a semantic use of a word, which is meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I have come across, and I don't know if you ever have come across, certain groups of people with a particular religious focus. I'm thinking right now, and I'll share, you know, some of my patients who were born-again Christians.
Mm-hmm.
They thought that the word meditation brought up or conjured for them something that they wouldn't be allowed to do or participate because it had a religious connotation that was not Christian. Now, those of us who have studied meditation may not even feel that way because you don't really incorporate, let's say, necessarily praying to a particular religious entity. So sometimes I have found that just the word stress reduction
mm-hmm.
is more accepted. And really, you could be talking about a stress reduction technique.
Exactly.
And I'm just wondering
exactly
if you ever
right.
came across
that. That's exactly right. And I think that I'm just using that as one word, but there's also Qigong and there's also breathing, just following your breath, all these things. Whatever helps to kind of get you kind of go inside a little bit and give that, and that actually can connect you, as you said, Ellen, you know, it connects you to the universe, I think, you know, in terms of connecting to other things. But it also kind of brings you back to being more mindful, just like when you're eating. There are different types of meditation, if you will. I'll use meditation this way. You can do a walking meditation. You can do an eating meditation. You can take a grape or a raisin and put it in your mouth and just move the raisin around in your mouth and feel the crinkles in the raisin. And then very slowly take one bite of the raisin and feel if there's any juice in there coming out or what it feels like, and very slowly chewing the raisin. And then eating a raisin is a very different experience. It's almost, if you will, meditative, and you really are paying attention.
We're going to go for another break, but when's the last time your conventional physician took the time to describe to you the health benefits and the stress-reducing effects of mindfully chewing a raisin? This is a real treat to have on today our guest, Dr. Jill Barron, and you can find her at drjillbaron.com. That's drjillbaron, or listen to our archive show. You can link right to her that way. Dr. Jill, we're going to take a little break right here, and when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion. So thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And Dr. Z, and we are here today with our guest, medical doctor, Dr. Jill Baron. And you can always contact us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We love to have your input, and we love to see you in person. That's why we do so many classes and workshops. And more recently, over the last few years, we also offer all of our classes and workshops online, both online live and online pre-recorded. If you like to do things at 2 a.m. from Korea, you know, we have patients and clients from all over the world and students learning things like natural medicine, autoimmune disease, what are the triggers, all kinds of topics, along with our many books that we've written, such as Arthritis, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, Cycles of Life, Herbs for Women, The Natural Guide to Great Sex, The Natural Medicine Chest, tons of information. Just go to naturalnurse.com and you can email us there. You can join our free newsletter list. And you can also find a phone number if you prefer the old-fashioned way of getting in touch. We actually talk to people as well. So thank you so much for being our guest today, Jill. Now, when people come to your office, and you can give that address again and a phone number if you'd like, what goes on? You know, how does that intake work with a patient when they come in?
Well, before a patient comes in, we send the history form and some administrative forms and what's called a medical symptoms questionnaire, MSQ. It's a functional medicine questionnaire to the patient. We recommend that they fill it out before they come in and send it back to us so I could review it. I'd like to get an idea of what's going on with the patient. And then the patient comes in, and I go over the history with them, and I do a timeline with the patient. I mentioned before, a timeline is where I start with the patient before the patient was born and find out what was going on when the patient was born. Did the parent smoke? Was there any other thing going on? And then I go to in utero, anything going on while the patient was in utero, and then so on. Were they breastfed, and what their childhood was like, both were there any medical issues and social or psychological issues? Were their parents divorced or married? All these things. and any exposures that they have. And then we go through their life, and they we go over and put down a timeline, any of these things about what's happened. Again, any triggers, did they get divorced, any major things happen, mediators that are going on, that kind of thing, any strong family history of a disease, and then up to their current concerns. And then I look at it, and I may put it on the matrix, or I just have an idea of what's going on. And then I do a very thorough physical exam, complete physical exam, and then I put together a plan for the patient. I order blood work. I may do certain functional medicine tests. I do a lot of tests. I do testing for what's called leaky gut or increased intestinal permeability, same thing. I also do a lot of stool tests because a lot of people can have conditions that are now thought to be caused by what's called leaky gut. And leaky gut is when the cells of the colon start spreading apart and partially digested food can leak out, and the body sees that partially digested food is foreign, like a foreign substance, and it attacks this food and mounts an inflammatory response. And this can happen because if people are eating a diet of a lot of sugar where they can get yeast, or they are taking a lot of antibiotics where they can also get yeast overgrowth because antibiotics tend to wipe out usually a lot of bacteria, and even the good bacteria. And what you're left with, you have a little bit of yeast normally in your gut, but that can overgrow and that can cause a problem and cause the cells to spread apart. Or they can take a lot of Advil or have stress. All these things can affect what's called inside the colon, the normal bacteria flora, the normal bacteria that are in there. Also, it's called the microbiome. So the microbiome gets affected, then that causes a change. It causes the cells to spread apart. And then the body can then, again, mount an immune response when this partially digested food leaks out. And I've seen people get better from arthritis or, having irritable bowel, what's called IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, depression, just by treating the gut. So it's really quite impressive. I'm not saying it's the whole story, but this is, the gut is the second brain, and a lot of things are happening in the gut. When I say gut, I'm saying the GI tract from the mouth to the anus, but mostly...
One thing I found very interesting is that I do lecture about this topic and actually in medical schools across the country, and I find that many physicians, obviously not you, but you may have an insight on this, they say that leaky gut does not exist, yet when I call it intestinal permeability and I back it up with, I literally have a list of thousands of references from mainstream medical literature in terms of the interstitial coherence of cells, which really is the same thing with a different word, that they can accept. But they don't seem to like the word leaky gut, and they even say it doesn't exist, which I don't understand.
Well, it's very interesting because if you go to PubMed and you put in leaky gut, a lot of things come up. So,
I know.
And actually, there's a very seminal article by, I think it's Alessandro Fasano, and it's called Leaky Gut. I'm looking at it right now. It's in the Clinical Reviews of Allergy and Immunology. It's called Leaky Gut and Autoimmune Diseases.
I don't know where they're getting that statement that they don't. It's not a belief system.
Yeah, he wrote a big article
really
about what's called
and non-dulin. Well-documented science.
Yes. So leaky gut may be one of the causes of autoimmune arthritis, like rheumatoid arthritis and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely actually well-documented for many decades in terms of the exact mechanism of action, such as the creation of circulating immune complexes. So we know that it is definitely part of what causes the dysregulation of the immune system. So it's a very important topic that you're addressing this. And that's great that you actually take that into account when you're talking about patient, when you're talking to a patient. So this is not an instant process. How long is that first visit with you?
It's about 2 hours. And what I love about spending that much time, we say an hour to 2 hours, but it usually is 2 hours, is that I get a gestalt of the patient. I could get a feel for, you know, who this patient is instead of just treating the symptoms. So, and I may, in fact, treat the symptoms, but I try and get, if the symptoms, as I mentioned, with high blood pressure or that kind of thing, needs urgent treatment. But if we can just, get an idea by talking to the patient, seeing what's going on in his or her life, I'm getting a kind of an understanding and hearing about his or her life using that timeline. It's a much different perspective, and I have, you know, there's a lot of people have had a lot of trauma, and it's just, you know, it's just you hear so much from a patient and really just appreciate what these people have gone through. You know, we've all gone through different things in our lives, and that's just to live, to go through challenges and obstacles, which make us hopefully stronger. But that's what it is.
True. Now, one of the things is what you said is very important. Very often I find, and you may find as well, that people go, gee, I've been meaning to go see Dr. Jill. I've been meaning to go see Dr. Jill. And what gets them off their butt and gets them in, I mean, this happens to me as well, they are in a medical emergency. You know, I'm just thinking this week, patient of the week, I had a man come in who said, I've been listening to you on the radio for 12 years, and I finally came in. Well, he was slurring his words and sweating. And I said, look, you really need to go see your conventional doctor, your primary care physician, and we can talk when you're feeling better. Sure enough, he was in the midst of having a heart attack.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't the time to finally drag himself in. So,
Wow.
You know, that was not the time for, like you said, you know, herbs and meditation. It was the time for some really serious emergency-type medicine, and certainly Western medicine shines at that. And then addressing all these things that led up to that, if he had come in 12 years ago, he might not have ever had that incident. And
right.
Now he really is very motivated. Since then, he has come in, and he's lost over 35 pounds slowly.
It's terrific.
You know, since he began, and he's really having a whole different outlook on life, and he started other kinds of meditation techniques, and that's the best. Well, I'm getting a note from our engineer here, Dr. Jill, that we are at the end of our show, so I want to thank you so much for being our guest.
Oh, my
and
pleasure.
And we'd love to have you on again. People can find you at navalexpo.com, see you speak. And, of course, go to your website, Dr. Jill Barron. That's drjillbarron.com. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Oh, thank you so much, Ellen.
And listeners, as always, you can catch us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until then, stay healthy.